Hi, I'm Alora Odell, and I'm the host of Write Your Story, Heal Your Life Summit. And I'm really grateful and honored that today I get to interview and talk to Devorah Spillman. And it's interesting when you say Devorah, because it's, you know, we're so used to saying Deborah, but it's Devorah, and I actually love Devorah. I have a friend, and her name's Devorah. It's such a beautiful name. And so we have actually been talking on the phone, and I'll just, full disclosure for the audience, that you have been helping me and coaching me and just doing some, you're just amazing as a coach. And basically, I wouldn't be doing this summit if it wasn't, you know, because, you know, without your support, it's been amazing. And I talked to you about being in the summit because your work really actually fits with Write Your Story, Heal Your Life. And you have been a storyteller, a master storyteller for over 30 years. So I would love it if you would tell the audience about the work that you do. I always feel that it's better if who I'm interviewing actually tells their own story, because you can tell your own story much better than someone else telling it.
Well, it is really my delight and my honor to be on this summit. And I love the combination of your title about writing and healing. And I have to say, I have really noticed this incredible connection between writing and healing more and more in my work. So I'll start kind of in the present, and then I think I'll take you all the way back to kind of how I got here. Because now, amazingly to me, I actually am a coach, but who knew? I've been a professional storyteller all my life. But as my husband and everybody loves to tease me, I do love to give advice. And now instead of paying me not to give advice, people actually pay me to give them advice, which cracks my children up. But
I love it.
I tell them, you know, they like the advice I give them. And so now really what I do is about sharing your story and living your purpose. And a lot of the conversations I have been having lately are really about integration. This powerful, powerful path that I feel that's a little bit different than the discussion of choosing a niche. It's a different way of finding that niche from my perspective. It's about integrating all of who you are and finding the thread that runs through it. And so that has happened to me, that all of who I am has now come to bear in what I do. And to the point where I, you know, pretty much tell everybody, you know, I'm deep. If you don't want to go deep, don't call me. I only do deep and a little wacky. And that's me. And it took me a while to go from my original start into the entrepreneurial world, which was my company called Spillman Story Selling. And I sort of, I'm kind of telling the story backwards, but I'll eventually adjust to going forwards. But you can tell stories from the end to the beginning, from the middle, from the beginning. This is a big part of my work, is that you don't have to start at the beginning. And so Spillman Story Selling came into being because I helped a friend win a huge contract with my in-story work. And he's like, you have to have a website. You have to make this a business. You have to go to corporate. So I did try to go into corporate, but I couldn't put on the clothes. And I just couldn't do it. I was too wacky. And he kept saying, you can't look like that to go into corporate. I'm like, so I found the entrepreneurial world where I get to be myself. And this is what I really love about this world that's opening up for so many of us. And I think the intersection of writing and being an entrepreneur is a very powerful one. And I'm sure many of the speakers have spoken about this. And it allows you to be your authentic self. And this is just a glorious thing. And it's very much in contrast in many ways to what it was like in a lot of the corporate world, where it was almost like you had to take your story off of you and show up like neutral with no story. Right. And I think in the end, this caused a tremendous damage. Mm-hmm. And that we're healing from this. We need our stories back. Mm-hmm. And really, without your story, you don't feel like you have a self in a way. You know, it's like our stories are actually how we have existence, how we know who each other is. You know, there's that quote that God didn't make the world with atoms, he made it with stories.
Oh.
And so there's just this profound opening that I think your whole summit is tapping into. And, you know, because even the world of writing is so much more expanded because now the way you can get your writing out in the world, it's just crazy amazing. There's so many ways you can get your writing out in the world, which was not true before the advent of the internet. And so we have this tremendous freedom and this tremendous reach. And at the same time, I'm seeing this part of because of who I am and what I do, this really big owning of finding our true purpose. And I've spoken, that's a big part of my work is I help people find their true purpose, share their authentic story, and then value themselves, you know, like charge what you're worth, speak from a stage, like having the confidence and the clarity to sort of stand up in who you are. So now, being a storyteller, you could end up having never getting a word in edgewise here, and I could talk at a limit streak forever. So I'm going to pause for a minute, let you say something before you set me off again.
Well, it's just wonderful that you are talking and sharing, and you're sharing your experience, and not only your experience with work, you know, jumping into the corporate world, you know, trying to jump into the corporate world and seeing, no, that's really not me. And you're sharing the story of others when you said, you know, in the corporate world, it's, you don't get to tell your story. And you were saying how important it is to tell your story. And I believe that it's important on so many levels because as you were actually speaking to, really our stories are us. You know, when you said that Adam, you know, did God create the world with Adam? No, he created the world with stories. And I had actually never heard that before, but when you said that, that makes sense. You know, we are the stories, and some of the oldest stories that we know were biblical stories, and they came from somewhere. You know, someone wrote those stories down. You know, often I think they changed them for what they were observing and seeing, etc. But who are we without our stories? And you really brought that to the forefront. So it definitely is. How do we share our stories? And some people say, oh, you know, I'm just not a writer. Mm-hmm. And I really believe that everyone is a writer. Because pretty much everyone, if you can read and write, which I love to remind myself in my gratitude every day that I'm grateful that I can read and write, because there are so many people who actually cannot read and write. And we're not just talking about developing countries. We are talking about in the US.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it actually is something that most of us, I know that I took for granted for many years that I could actually read a book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in my journaling, even if you just write your journal, you are a writer.
Mm-hmm.
You are writing. And even if you never publish a work or you never even want to publish a work, I think many people, if they go back and look over their journals, they'll see their journey. They'll mm-hmm. see their journey in life, and they'll see that there's been transformation.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. So a couple things I want to say. First of all, you said such an interesting interpretation of that quote, but it's not right, which is, actually the quote is, God didn't make the world with atoms.
Atoms! Excellent. I love it even more.
God made the world with stories. But, you know, I'm Jewish and I read, I'm fairly traditional and observant and spiritual in my whole Jewish tradition. So I read a lot of biblical texts. And so I was just kind of cracking up going, oh, that's such an interesting interpretation. And really, in our tradition, the story is so core to our tradition and to how we find ourselves and, you know, in the Jewish tradition telling, you know, the Bible is sort of a story. It's not exactly just a linear story, but it has elements of story. And so this quality of story is very profound, actually. And so I want to take you on a little bit of a journey backwards to where I started. And I'll do this for a couple of reasons. It'll give you a sense of who I am and my story. Also model for you how you can tell your story. And I'll interrupt periodically to sort of show you what I'm doing, in a sense. And just like you said, everyone is a writer. Really, everyone has a story to tell. And not everybody is a storytelling performer, because in the entrepreneurial world, it's often not exactly performing. When you tell your story, you want to be able to know why you're telling it and tell the people why. So I'm going to tell you my story so that you know how I got started. And there's a couple of reasons that I'm going to tell it to you. And one is because I really believe that when you go back and you look at your young adult stories, your early childhood stories, they will often show you your natural gifts, your natural talents, or something very powerful you have overcome. So when I was young, I knew I wanted to be a nursery school teacher. That was what preschool teachers were called.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Yeah. And I also was always, I loved stories. I loved writing stories and I loved drama. And when I was in high school, I was in an alternative high school. I've always been into alternative everything. I worked as a volunteer in a preschool. And one day I was there, and I've always been like a really hardcore active recess teacher. I'm a big believer in recess. And so we were playing tag, and I was chasing the children, and they were going, nah, 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 you can't get me, which I really hate that. So I said, if you want me to chase you, say, iggledy biggledy boo. I don't know, it just came out of my head. So they're going around going, giggly, biggly, tiggly, and then finally I'm tired. And I said, okay, fine, sit down, I'll tell you a story. And then out of my mouth comes, once there was an iggledy biggledy boo that lived in Zambadoodle. Don't ask. I do not know where that came from. You know, sometimes that's your gift. It just comes to you, right? So I began making up this story about this iggledy biggledy boo and Zambadoodle, and the grass is purple there and the sky is yellow and the sun is blue. And the next day, they begged me to tell another and another. And the wildest boys, who would never sit for anything, would sit for as long as I would, as long as I would tell them this ongoing story. So for the next 40 years of my life, basically, I told that story to children all over. And we made up more adventures. We made art. We made murals, created characters. And that story launched me into being a storyteller. I didn't know I was going to be a storyteller, but that story came out of me. And as I taught preschool through many, many years in elementary school and became an artist in the schools, I began to create original stories based on the curriculum. And it became more and more sophisticated as I grew up and I studied more and studied theater. And eventually I created a one-woman show based on my Jewish practice called Is God a Man in the Sky? And then I got more in my Judaism, so then I did a combination of traditional tales and original tales. And what I noticed, as I have now begun to go very deep into my coaching business with story, is that when I told stories to children, I used the realm of fantasy. Now I use imagination to take them to these very deep places. The places where more is possible than what you thought previously. And this is a big delight of mine. And now I have coined a phrase that I call spiritual imagination. So I'm going to tell you one other story about myself. What I want you to think about from that story is that notice what you've done in your life that just came out of you. Because maybe it's time to bring it back. So just think on that. Mm-hmm. Then I want to also tell you how I came to be an entrepreneur. I really never knew I was going to be a storyteller. I had no idea I was going to be an entrepreneur, and I truly did not know I was going to be a coach. And now I just completely love being a coach. I think it's the coolest profession ever. So about 4 years ago, I was at the end of my time working in a Jewish school in Portland, Oregon. When I started in that school, I was the revered storyteller of the school. And then I was the revered storyteller and Jewish studies educator. And then I wasn't. Money issues changed. They really needed someone to just teach the Hebrew language, and I had lived in Israel for 5 years. They had me train. I said, you know, this is not really my genius. Other people can do this. No, we need you to do this. They began not to be able to see me anymore. And I began to feel that my genius had become commonplace and almost invisible to them. And they just needed a body to do whatever was most needed that this body that I was could do. And I didn't do it as well. And I didn't feel as revered. And I managed to get fired. For the most bizarre, I had been thinking I really need to leave and just go back into my storytelling, but I just didn't quite have the courage to do it, but I was praying about it, and I got fired for a bizarre supervision thing, and it was so bizarre that they actually still had me teach to the end of the year. They still had me teach my summer course. I told you, I was kind of revered, and I even got unemployment, and I got unemployment for starting your own business. And so I started my business. I was like, okay, thank you, God. And then I didn't know which should I be, a storyteller, a clown, a puppeteer. I have all these talents. And I then began to try out this helping people tell their story. And a friend of mine said, Deborah, I wish I could tell stories like you. And I said, what do you mean? She said, I'm a terrible storyteller. I said, no, you're not. This was an extraordinary woman who's a financial planner and a leader in our Jewish community. I took her through my in-story process. It wasn't named yet, but it was basically the same process. And it was so clear and simple and easy for her. She said, that's it. I said, that's it. Can you do that for the Jewish Federation? Can you do that for my board? And I said, sure. Can you do that? And this made me realize that it was a real thing. And that's what started me into the sort of film and story selling side of my business. But in this entrepreneurial world, if you are true to your authentic self, your business will evolve. And it will evolve into your authentic self if you give it half a chance. And so that is what has happened, is in my authentic work with people, I always made them close their eyes and go inside and do this guided process that I have the acronym STATE. And those five letters are the acronym for the five steps of my in-story process. It's my own original process that I made up in order originally to help people kind of feel their stories internally before telling them. But it's just opened up into this whole other magical realm of spiritual imagination and a little bit of energy healing and finding your purpose and your true self. And it has opened up this extraordinary world. So someone who came to me for writing, for example, she came to me 2.5 years ago, and her entire life has opened up new vistas, new work, new writing. And she still says, I can't believe you still blow me away. And it's because we go deep and we access content from this other realm, which I told you that I, which we're going to actually do in this interview. I'm not just going to whet your appetites. I'm actually going to lead you through a real experience, but I kind of wanted you to see the journey that I went through so that you can kind of trust and know that that is part of what this authentic soul-driven purpose work is. And that part of the discovery of it for many people is through writing, but often that writing leads to doing other things. It doesn't always lead to just the writing itself. So that's kind of a picture of kind of my story, or at least some of it.
It's a great story to hear, and because I think there's many people, and I know that there's been places in my life where I've been wanting to do something, and then I think, well, I can't do that because I've got young children at home, or my children are now in high school, and I have to make a living, etc., etc. And just that leap of faith that we can jump to the next thing, or to the thing that we really feel passionate about. And sometimes it does seem the divine makes that possible. So when we might be, it's a great book. My friend actually just gave it to me as a gift. Might know my friend, Talia Lutzker. She's a really good friend of mine. And she came to stay with me, and she always brings me gifts, and she, she's just one of those, I never expect it, and I go into my bedroom and there's something sitting on my bed. But she gave me this book, Change Me Prayers by Tosha Silva. Mm-hmm. And I have many books. I probably have about 2,000 books, and I have not read 2,000 books. And so, I might buy a book, or someone might give me a book, and it just sort of goes onto the pile to read. I started reading Change Me Prayers immediately, and I probably got halfway through it in a day or so. And there is so much in this book about having faith. And she shares her own stories, and she also shares stories of her clients. So, for example, with you, you're in this job and, you're loved and you're doing a great job, but there's definitely the little voice and the stronger voice that's going, I know that there's something else for me. I know that, really I'm a storyteller, or even if we don't always put those thoughts into words, and then you get fired kind of out of the blue in some ways, but it's sort of like, and then trusting that the divine has a plan for you. And that plan was you could jump in and be your true authentic self. Not saying that you weren't authentic before, you were starting to, you'd already started on this road of being a storyteller, but you could be now fully empowered.
And I think it was also just my growth as how I want to work in the world. Like, as I'm older, I like having my own business. I like working from home. I like the fact that now that I'm 60 years old, I have my own super cool business. I'm about to run my fifth half marathon. Actually, by the time this interview comes out, I will have run my fifth half marathon on June 4th. And I was encouraged to do that by my business coach. And so I feel this sense that I feel such amazing gratitude to be a coach and have my own business and to do this extraordinary, deep, soul-nourishing work that really, I think it's making our world a better place. And so many people who come to me and I talk to have this feeling that more is being asked of us. The sense that I'm meant to do something more, and for so many people, it means it's time for them to bring their more spiritual alternative, it's like woo-woo and proud, right? Like bringing that, what was like derogatorily called, oh, you're so woo-woo, so woo, all that is coming back and being more honored and more focused upon and integrated. I have a lot of people who are in the business world bringing this more intuitive work forward, and people are talking more and more about like some all different kinds of shamanic teachings and learning. And I think it's the that big process of integration and bringing your whole self together. And for a lot of people, there's a side of them that because of the times, they just didn't show it. It was, you know, that kind of psychic, intuitive, energy healer, all of that empath and all that stuff is now much, much more acceptable, certainly in this entrepreneurial coaching world. And I think the work of really going deep to find and integrate that work is so powerful. And what I have found and why this in-story work that has kind of come to me is so powerful is because I think that often people get stuck because you can't kind of get at it from the outside in. You can't really get at it from your try-harder mind. And people often get stuck, and this is in writing as well, they get stuck in what I call the form. Somebody wants to write their life story and they're stuck because should it be a chapter book? Where should I start? How should it look? Where should I publish it? Should I make it a blog? And when they finally land in my doorstep, all stuck and frustrated, I say, forget all that. You don't need to know any of that to start. I have them go all the way back, and you're just going to start with your content, and you're just going to get it through this process, which we're going to do. And you're going to go in, and you're just going to ask and trust, and whatever shows up, that's what you write. And it doesn't matter what order it comes out in, because later you can rearrange it into any order you want. Once you have your content, you can use it to write a blog, to make a website, to write a book, to speak on stage. Once you have that content that you source and access authentically from that deep place, you can use it for whatever you want. But if you're trying to get it by thinking harder about it, it doesn't work. And people will get stuck and they're like, I want to write my story, but I can't get a word out. I can't get a word on the paper. I can't get a word to come out of my mouth. And it's a frustrating like buildup of pressure, right? I just had a brand new client and we just relieved her pressure. She was on one of my actual online workshops and she said something. I said, I'm not going to tell you what it is now because it's her book, but I said, that thing you just said, that's the title of your book. And everybody on the entire call, everyone went collectively, oh! And in our, it was so interesting. And in our session, it turns out that thing that she got was from a story, but it's also kind of a metaphor. It turns out that it's really a metaphor for her entire self, who she is, what she's writing, and it just opened her back up to completely writing what she, it was just, so this realm opens up crazy interesting stuff. But if you can't get at it by thinking harder about it. And so that's why I'm so like dedicated to, I make everybody close their eyes and go inside and do this. Even when I was in corporate, I made them do that.
I don't want to do that. I want to do this with you.
Okay. All right, we're going to do it. All right, you ready?
Yeah, I'm really up for it.
Okay, good. Okay, so everybody who's listening, you need, if you're listening to this driving or whatever, you can do it with your eyes open, but ideally you want to be sitting somewhere where you're uninterrupted, where you can close your eyes and do the process. And you can, it's recorded, so you'll be able to come back. All right. So go ahead and just close your eyes. Just begin to notice your breath coming in and out. And really allow yourself to feel that shift to stillness. And feel a sense of breathing bigger than your physical self. And then allow your awareness to shift to that flow from above. Feel that connection to Source, God, the divine, pure universe. And feel that pure Source light from above coming down to the top of your head. And feel that light flowing down, filling your whole body, your whole being with light love, healing, blessing, guidance, clarity down through your feet into the earth, grounding you in the earth. And breathe up that rooted, solid, comforting energy of the earth into the center of your being. And then again, allow your awareness to shift to that flow from above and feel that light coming down to the top of your head, filling your whole body, your whole being with light, love, healing, blessing, guidance, clarity down through your feet into the earth, grounding you in the earth. And then breathe up that rooted, solid, comforting energy of the earth into the center of your being. And be aware of being in that state of connected flow. This is the first step always of my guided process that has the acronym STATE. And the first step is always this one, stop and breathe. The second step is always think about it. All of these meditative processes will have the first step, but this is kind of unique to this work, this in-story work, is the think about it step. And this step I use with people when they work with me over a year for all different kinds of things. We will think about what's blocked. We'll think about where you're going. We have many options here to direct the work. So for today, what I want you to do is I want you to simply think about, who am I and what do I do in the world? Just think about, who are you and what do you do in the world? And for now, think about what you love to do. Just let it kind of be in the front of your consciousness, like stream of consciousness. Just let yourself ever so gently think about, put your attention on who you are and what you do in the world. And just allow yourself to put your attention on any parts of your life that come up. The next two steps always go together. It's ask and trust. So the way this works, and this is crucial to this process, is you just ask. And what we're going to ask for today, we also ask for all different things in this process. But today I just want you to ask, what is an image or a metaphor for who I am and what I do in the world? Just like that. Just in your mind, just ask, what is an image or a metaphor for who I am and what I do in the world? And here's the key. Trust what has already popped into your mind. For almost everybody, something will pop into your mind instantly. And here's the trick. You have to trust that first thing that pops in. This is part of how you access this content from your subconscious, from the other realms, and how you get around your resistance. And if you notice there's a couple troubleshooting things, if you noticed yourself going, not that, not that, not that, go back and say, yes, that. Don't worry if it makes any sense. Don't worry if you like it. Don't worry about any of that. Just trust whatever you get. And the last step is explain or interpret. So how are you like this image? How is this image or metaphor like you? What is its message? Just trust your intuition. Just explain, interpret, what is this to you? Just whatever comes to you about it. Then we're going to do one other quick thing. This I developed as a remedial exercise because I had people who couldn't do it. They are very literal thinkers, and they said, I got nothing. And for those people, I created this next exercise, which is actually, in the end, super fun for everybody. And if you have a Facebook group, then you can share it there. So, what shoe are you? Not what shoe do you wear, what shoe are you? And why? What shoe are you? Are you a high heel? Are you a platform shoe? Are you a flip-flop, a hiking boot, a slipper? And then notice the details. What makes image and metaphor powerful are the details. And so notice, how does this shoe feel? How does it look? What are the details of it? And let it become as detailed as possible. And then ask yourself, how am I like this shoe? How is this shoe like me? And that's super fun. And I had one interviewer who this simple process changed his life. He got such a powerful message from the shoe that it integrated all of his work in a way he had never been able to do before. So it's sometimes really amazing what you get. And we'll talk about all different ways you can use this. But for now, bring yourself on back. And for everybody listening, go ahead and write down. This is where writing comes in really handy, and this is a writing summit. What I recommend is write down what you got and just whatever your first thoughts are about it. And one of the things that you'll get in my free gift, I'm going to be giving you a 3-hour amazing, amazing training called Soul Story Power Intensive. But you also get, because I never leave anyone hanging, you will also have the opportunity to get a free Soul Story session with me. And I do that because sometimes people will get something in this process and they have no idea what to do with it. But that's my gift. That's kind of my genius and my talent, is I can always see what it means. And that's what we'll do together. Now with Alora and I, we'll go in and we'll look at what you got. So here's how we do that. Tell us first and this is how you think about it to everyone who's listening. First, tell us, just so we kind of can connect the dots, in the think about it step, when I asked you, who are you and what did you do in the world? What did you say? What did you think of?
I thought of being a facilitator. I facilitate writers, and especially in my writing group, I am really good at holding space for people to share their stories. Mm. And it's where I feel at home. It's a completely natural place for me to be in. I don't judge. People share, you know, all sorts of things. And I'm really good at listening. Yeah.
Love that. And, you know, we forget to talk about story listening. You know, the fact that you do that, it's underspoken about and underrated, but the power of what can happen when someone listens deeply to you is actually quite extraordinary. So it is, and often the people who are very powerful listeners are a little bit quiet and hidden. So everyone, you should know that is not a small thing. What was your image?
My image was a swan.
Oh, so just describe it.
Well, it was a beautiful white swan gliding along on a lake. Yeah.
And tell me, Annie, there's one of the tips with image and metaphor is to get as detailed as possible. So look around. What else can you see? What else was in the image?
The swan, there were babies. They were, what do we call baby swans? They have a special name.
I'm
trying to remember that recently. And so it was really as if here was the swan, you know, looking very graceful. But there was that sense of this real strength in the gentleness, gentle strength, and very protective over her babies.
Love that. Yeah. And how did it make you feel? And this is one of the questions I often ask. This is a good one to ask yourselves, is what's the feeling? I mean, you told us some already because you talked about this gentle strength, but anything else you noticed that how it made you feel?
Peaceful. Really peaceful. So, then the lake was calm. Everything around just seemed very, very calm. And it also seemed that all the attention was on the swan. And even though the swan wasn't doing very much except just sort of gliding along.
Who was on the bank?
I was on the bank. And it's interesting because I had a memory of being taken to the River Thames when I was a young child, and there were swans in the River Thames. And it's not as if it's the cleanest river, but there were swans on the bank. And I remember just falling in love with swans. And in Britain, apparently the Queen basically owns all the swans, which I think really means that they come under the guardianship of the royal family, which means that they're highly protected. You know, it's a very severe crime if anyone hurts a swan.
And what did you, so I always ask you to first try to work yourself. So what do you make of this? Like, how are you like this swan? How is a swan like you and what you do in the world?
Well, I think if I had a situation yesterday, if I was fully transparent and it's just like, oh, really? Would I share this about myself? But, you know, I think I'm a really easygoing person in general. And I'm pretty calm, and there can be chaos going around me, you know. So when I do go over and I take my granddaughter to the local big pond, you know, there's the swans, but there's always these ducks, and, you know, people are feeding the ducks, and it's kind of chaotic. And yet the swans just like hanging out, you know. So I'm really good with chaos. So like putting a summit together, for example, when it really comes down to the wire, I'm really good at of just pulling it all together in those last moments, but I can stay very calm. Yet as a mother, I'm really protective. So I'll go from 0 to 100 in a second, which I did yesterday with someone who was basically maybe inadvertently, and they were not conscious, but they've done something that really actually attacks my child. And I saw them and asked them a question. You know, I said, did you do this? And they admitted to it. And I was with my best friend, and she had never seen me in 25 years go from 1, you know, 0 to 100. And she's like, and she said, that was ballsy. And then she said, you know, you were being a mama bear. That's what you were doing.
Yeah.
And so I was very much, I will be calm. I will let all this chaos happen around me, and I can stay very calm, but it really does come down to the wire. Like if you attack or you try and hurt a dear friend of mine or my children, then I will be the swan. And you see swans, you know, they will be very calm, but they'll, if someone comes to attack their young, you'll see this side that you don't think that swans are vicious. So in all transparency, I will do that.
And I think it's interesting because I've said a few things about the swan. It does a couple of different things because it's also a childhood's memory as well. Yeah. As your image. And often we can use childhood memories as metaphor. And so, because often our childhood stories, they're not really relevant by their content, they're relevant by the metaphor they hold. And so it's been a strong part of who you are your whole life. Like, you loved those swans your whole life. Like, these are the things that it's very powerful to recognize in ourselves. And I think this is part of how you are for your clients and in your work. That sense of being that gentle strength, I think, is part of your natural gift. is that it's very gentle, but it's so strong. And that same fight that you have for your children, I really think that's really what you have for your clients, the people you work with, that you will fight for them to not quit on themselves, to not give up, to not turn away from their beauty, you know. And then what you hold up for them is what a swan kind of represents for a lot of us. A swan feels almost unattainable. It has a kind of graceful, elegant beauty and strength that almost feels like we can't possibly touch that. And I have the feeling that part of what you give people is for them to find that extraordinary elegance and beauty in their work. But you also do it with this very gentle strength, or they're safe and they can be listened to and not pushed too hard. And yet absolutely you would never let them quit is my feeling. And that's the same. Your children know that they can trust you 100%. Like, I just have this feeling that this swan is at the core of the combination of this just beauty and this rock solid trust that someone can rely on you. And this kind of imagery, it helps us talk about what's unique about us, because now you can take these qualities of the swan and do even more with them to be able to articulate more viscerally, uniquely, and profoundly the quality of who you are. Like, I would never describe anything about me like a swan in a million years. Like, I'm just way too wacky for that. Like, it would just never be my thing. But that's the whole point. Like, the person who needs the, like, gentle, clear strength, elegance, and grace that you're going to offer them with the swan image is really different than the person who needs to be deep and a little wacky and go, oh, you know, like, I just have a whole other energy. And part of this work is to own that in a deep and true way. So I'm going to tell you and tell everybody, you want to go back to your images and your metaphors and work with them. Mm-hmm. And I promise you, if you're stumped, you will have a way to ask me to help you, okay? So don't worry. But trust yourselves a little bit. Use your intuition and kind of play with them. But I do tend to see more for each person than they are able to see for themselves. And I think that's in a lot of ways what we each do for the other. Is we see for our clients, if you're a coach or a mentor or a teacher, we see for our students and clients what they can't see for themselves. And it's a very profound part of each of our gifts. So I also want to know, what shoe are you?
Oh, the shoe really surprised me in some ways. And then, well, you know, I love shoes.
Okay.
My friend said to me, "Do you have a shoe fetish?" And I said, "I don't think so." And she said, "Well, do you have more than 30 pairs of shoes?" And I said, "Oh yeah, oh yeah." And I was just—I'm writing, you know, I'm working on my memoir, and till I was in my early 20s, I only had one pair of shoes. You know, we grew up really, really poor.
Wow.
You know, so I didn't have, I was lucky if I had one pair of shoes that really fit me. Anyway, so I have all these shoes and I love heels. I don't do stilettos, but, you know, I just love shoes. And the shoe that I got was like the most sensible shoe that you could wear that were lace-ups. And they were not pretty, but they were like, oh, these are the sensible shoes that you put on, that you walk all day, that you stand all day. And so that was really interesting to get the sensible shoes.
That's so funny, because you know what is so funny is the people who always wear those sensible shoes, they get high heels as their image.
Oh,
seriously, it's the funniest thing. I get all these like hippie types grounded and they get red stiletto shiny high heels. And so because you probably have shoes like that and let that part show, you got the sensible shoe that ties up. I just think that's so funny.
funny. I know. I was like, ooh.
So how are you like that shoe?
You know, I like that shoe a lot. And
how are you like it?
And how am I like it? I realize, you know, I've definitely been through kind of my hippie stage and this, that, and the other. But when it always came down to it, I've always been like the sensible one. I'm the eldest child, you know, and my three sisters are 8, 9, and 14 years younger than me.
Wow.
Which basically means when I was 8, I had a baby sister. When I was 9, I had 2 baby sisters that were 15 months apart. And my mom basically took to bed, you know, so I stepped in to be the mom, you know, at 9 years old. And that's too young to look after, to look after babies. But I've had that very, very sensible going back to, you know, I'm great in chaos and I'm great in a crisis. You know, I remember once, a couple of times when my kids were young and they got into accidents. One time my daughter, she was playing in the house and suddenly her foot is split open and there's blood everywhere and everyone's going, oh my God. And I'm just like, okay, wrap her in the towel, you know. We'll just drive to the hospital and, you know, gave her a lollipop to suck on. And the same when my other daughter was jumping, this is a whole story that will end up being my memoir, but we ended up in the Getty apartment, one of the Getty apartments in New York. She's jumping on the bed and fell in onto the corner bedside stand and split her head open. You know, and everyone's freaking out. And I just like got a big towel and wrapped her and just talked to her. And so, yeah, the sensible shoes, it's like bottom line, when it comes down to it, I'm usually the sensible one. You know, when everyone arrives at Disney, when I arrived at Disneyland with a bunch of punks when I was 18, they're all dropping acid and I'm going, I'm just going to go over there and just get a bottle of water. Just like, I don't know these people.
But you know what's so great is in both the shoe and the swan, you have these two sides that go together. All right, because you just told us how you have high heels and all these fancy shoes and you love shoes and you got the sensible shoe. And with the swan, there's the elegant and the beauty of the swan. That's like the high heel shoes, but there's also the protector. That's the sensible. I will protect you no matter what. This is showing you, and this, I want everyone to see this, how much what we get shows us who we are at our core. These two sides of you are what make you unique and powerful and so good at what you do in all of these departments, both as a parent and as a mentor. And you see it through these images. And you can use these folks as launches into your writing. Right, you could use the swan as a launch into a little bit of your point of view. Right, same with the shoe about how you only had one. A big story is told about having only one shoe and then having many shoes. That's a very powerful image for the difference in what you've done with your life. Mm-hmm. And so everybody can do this. This process works for everybody, every time, always. You just need to learn to develop your sort of metaphor muscles, I like to say, in order to be able to really understand what it means. Like the interpretation process is part of the work. And then the continued willingness to go in and look again and again and again and to clear blocks. And the one other thing I want to tell people that I have developed that's been really powerful in this work is how you get around resistance. Resistance comes up all the time. And you can read about it elegantly, beautifully written about by Stephen Pressfield in his book, The War of Art.
Right.
I needed to make it mine. And so one night when I was feeling particularly stuck in my resistance, I was remembering somebody using the caterpillar metaphor in a way that really helped me. And she said, when the caterpillar makes its chrysalis, it doesn't just sprout little little butterfly wings on its caterpillar body. It literally turns to goo. And nobody likes being in the goo. It's not pleasant. No one likes it. This little, it turns to the goo, but here's the thing. It has to turn to the goo in order to become the butterfly. And then someone recently added this other very cool piece, is that there's a little story where somebody tried to help the butterfly out of the chrysalis and it died. The struggle of the butterfly to get out of its chrysalis strengthens its wings and is necessary for its survival. So here's the thing. These three steps are the three steps that once you know these three steps, you will never stay stuck again. Mm-hmm. So on my website, people can go to just my name, divorcespillman.com. Besides the regular free gift, on my website is this webinar I did about how to never stay stuck, how to get out of the goo. Because once you know it's just the goo, then you say, oh, it's just the goo. What do I need to do? You don't beat yourself up. You just find a tool to get out of the goo. This is very important as you embark on your purpose work, your visionary work, your writing work, your soul work, because any elevated endeavor, you will always hit resistance no matter what. Then you'll come out, you'll have another elevated vision, you'll hit your resistance again. It's just how it works. And if you listen to the webinar, you'll also see kind of a bigger paradigm for this three-step process. And so if you do all of this, I promise you that you will get a clearer handle on your purpose, your mission, your voice. You will find your voice, and you can put it in your writing, in your speaking, and in the life you want to make for yourself.
I'm going to do it. Definitely I'm going to go to your website, because I think all of us, it's if we're writers, coaches, entrepreneurs, whatever field we're in. I spoke to someone the other day and mentioned this about, I really feel that you need a coach. You know, I'm a writer, I'm a coach. I still need a coach. You know, I have a writing coach, I have a business coach. And someone in the interview said, I have a coach for everything. Because, you know, and sometimes it's like we can give great advice to other people. And then at the end of the day, do we take on that advice for ourselves? And then our coaches, and when, like, you offering the webinar and the other gifts is incredibly generous. And they're gifts to us. So it's the coaching that we can jump into for ourselves that someone else is offering. And sometimes we just need to sit back, and especially when we are coaches, because it's wonderful work, and it also takes, you know, you're holding space, so it takes energy. Mm-hmm. So how can we just sit back and say, okay, now it's time for me? And, you know, we talk about that a lot in, you know, in our training, and going back to the beginning of the interview when you spoke about Judaism. And a few weeks ago, I was at my friend's daughter's bat mitzvah, and she did her whole bat mitzvah on Shabbat, and saying, you know, in the very old teachings that if you did not take Shabbat, then you could be executed if you were found working. And it was just like, oh my God, that's really intense. But really, I think as a metaphor, it's about you really need to take this time. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've been, you know, doing, is, you know, taking Shabbat from, you know, Fridays, you know, through Saturday. And if I really could keep going, if there's not a major project, through Sunday. But it's this time that we can rejuvenate. And one of the things that you were just saying about the resistance will come up. And the resistance does come up. The resistance comes up in our writing. It comes up in our projects. And it comes up in our lives. And, you know, that saying, what you resist persists. I'm not sure if that was Jung. You know, it was one of the biggies. But so how we can work through that and any tools that we're given. So definitely what you've offered as the webinar and that meditation. I just got so much out of that. And it's so much clarity, and for me to go on with the rest of my day today, just being able for myself to accept, oh, I'm a pretty sensible person. and especially as an entrepreneur, because you have to be committed and you have to be sensible. And I think it's great, many things that you shared today, just such a great resource for our viewers and listeners, especially as there's many writers who are our viewers and entrepreneurs, and just giving people those little tips and those guidelines, and just because being a writer and being an entrepreneur when you work for yourself can sometimes be very isolating. So the more that we can share, and I just sent an email to all our experts and speakers, and I think you got a copy of that, but just saying we are building community here. Mm-hmm. And we're all community. And it's so amazing. And also that you spoke to earlier that we are, things have to, spiritually, we're on a big paradigm shift right now. And that we need to be part of that shift. And through the work that we do, it's very much a part of that. And on that note, the hour just went like that. And it always, I believe that when you're talking to someone, that it's an easy conversation and it's interesting, but the time really does fly. It really does fly. So I want to thank you again for being part of this summit, and honoring us with your time and your gifts. And definitely we will have a link to your website, so it's just up and all people have to do is do a click and they go there. But definitely please go and hop over to Devorah's site, because there's free gifts for you, but also Devorah offers so much and it is an incredible coach. So thank you so much. And I know that we'll be talking very soon.
Thank you.
All right. Have a wonderful